You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting show of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. Bruce Cameron, along with Neil and Sherrod today. So, got the triple threat for everybody going on. So, thanks for tuning in and being with us today. So, good to have you back on the show.
Oh, absolutely. Good to be back. Thank you all for having me.
Sir, yes, sir. So, well, we've talked a lot about different recovery topics in terms of drug and alcohol addiction recovery, sober living, and those things. But I think to be in the community that we are requires us to be good members of that community. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about that today in terms of how we interact with others in the community and why that's an important part. I know that I've been involved in addiction treatment since, around 1984, and helped open a charter hospital in Austin, Texas, Charter Lane Hospital, I believe it was, 1984, and helped run the detox unit there, and kind of been around ever since. And so, man, over the years, I've had an opportunity to meet a lot of people in the addiction recovery industry. And having those connections has been really important because as solo practitioners, we really need to have a network of resources readily available that we can plug people into should they need to go into an inpatient program or an intensive outpatient program or even a sober living program. So having those relationships, sustaining and maintaining them are very important parts of your career, of our careers. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that today because I think that it gets kind of missed out. You know, we talk about setting goals and how to maintain and achieve abstinence when those are great things. But, you know, all those things happen in a greater, broader context that we're going to talk about today. So.
Well, and this carries over to any, really any industry, any network you're in. And that's really what we're talking about, networking in a sense. And I don't know that I've ever been involved in any field where it wasn't essential. You know, ours I feel like it's even more important because of the nature of what we do and the nature of who we work with. You know, you want to know where you're sending people. You want to know what kind of people you're sending them to, you know, and depending on the nature of that case, you might direct them to this person instead of that person.
Right.
And so understanding who you're working with and how they handle each individual case and circumstance.
You know, one of the things that I'm keenly aware of is that, you know, these programs are only as good as the people who work in them.
Yeah,
absolutely. And
you can say that five more times.
And I'll be bold enough to say that. And the thing that I think it's frustrating to me as a practitioner, get a little bit closer to y'all, loving up on Sherrod here. The thing that's frustrating to me is that there's a lot of turnover in this industry. You know what I mean? Therapists turnover. They go from place to place. Sometimes the reps turn over, seems like every year or two. And so I'm always like, so I'll get out on Facebook and I'll say, who's the rep for such and such program? And, oh, okay. And I've known them three times over being the rep in different places. So all that to say the commentary here is staying current and staying active because I might not know where somebody's at or make a wrong decision. So, and have to ask advice to some of the people who know where the different contact points are. So that's one thing about the addiction treatment world. For the most part, it's pretty fluid and ever changing with personnel.
Right.
Yeah, we're a very small community. And I piggyback on that and say, yeah, it's very important to know, like you say, the credibility of who you're sending these individuals to. Because again, these families are in panic mode. They're entrusting us as the professional caregivers to be able to provide a certain service that is supportive. So it's very important that you network and, like you say, stay up to date on who's who and who's where and what's what.
Yeah.
Right.
And from a marketing perspective, it's good too, because people know you, people know us, and we know them. And so it really does help with marketing and helping people get business, because we make a good amount of referrals every month. So it's important to know where to go and personally match that program for that person.
No one knows you're there. If you're not out meeting people, you're not getting exposure. And so the more people you meet, the more opportunities you see. And not only that, but the more things, the more people you meet that you can utilize. You know, the more folks I meet in the industry, that means the more people I can help, because now I just have more tools in my tool belt, because we're meeting people who do things that we don't do. And right. These people are looking exactly. At people like us who do things they don't do. So the exposure of it is the first thing that I think of when it's talking about, when we're talking about networking. And since I'm the youngest and the newest to this industry, there's a lot of people, and that was not.
That's funny. Go ahead.
I sound smart. It's okay. Not an underhanded comment.
No.
But folks who are closer to my age and newer into this industry, a lot of them have commented to me that they're uncomfortable getting out and meeting people. It's hard for them to do. And while I understand that, it shouldn't matter, because you have to. And it has to be bigger than how you feel about it. It has to be bigger than that. You have to know and remind yourself that this is essential if you're going to, A, be successful, and B, help people. If you want to help people, you need to meet people and find them. Because these people, like Sherrod said, you know, the families who are experiencing this stuff and the families who are suffering are not in meet people mode. They're not in networking mode. We need to go find them a lot of times, because sometimes they don't know where to look or where to turn. So that's what I think of the exposure of it.
And then also, and I did one this weekend where I knew the rep and I made the referral, called the rep, had that relationship with the representative, say, look, can you talk to this person before you send them into the call center, before you send them in to whoever is working the intake desk and have that kind of personal touch on the referral. So I think that means a lot too, to have that relationship with the representative of the treatment facility, to give the customer that special feeling, like, okay, you know what I mean? I'm an important person, and I'm just not another number calling into the admissions desk to get admitted into a rehab. So,
yeah, that call line.
Mm-hmm. And think about how much of the anxiety is decreased when you know that you have that red carpet treatment of just knowing that, hey, I got in the front line, I was able to get directly to where I spoke to a person. I didn't have to leave a voicemail.
Right.
I mean, think about that. I'm in a crisis mode and I have to leave a voicemail. And now it's a waiting game. We know 30 seconds feels like 30 minutes.
Yes, especially right in that crisis.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I've been working with the family, and they waited for 2 weeks to hear back from a place. And this was, you know, at their directive, they said, you know, we'll get back to you. And so their insurance, you know, they're working with Medicaid. So there's not a whole lot of options.
Yeah.
And the one option that looked good said, wait 2 weeks. And then at the end of 2 weeks, the answer was no. So here we've lost 2 weeks. Things don't look good, you know. So, yeah, you're absolutely right, Sherrod.
Yeah. The hope window is closing.
Right.
Right. That's where we use our social media and other contacts. Hey, can somebody take somebody with this type of coverage and this type of budget or whatever, and then we can get feedback back from the various reps, or they'll know somebody that maybe we can go to, because we don't know everybody, we don't know everything. So mm-hmm. So it's also another point is that getting out and meeting people, you get to learn more, your knowledge increases.
Right. Yeah, every time I meet someone, I learn something new. You know, you never walk away with nothing. Never. And you've been doing this, what'd you say, how many years now?
A lot, like 30.
And does that ever change?
No, there's always something new. Yeah, some of the transcranial work, some of the brain work. I remember when EMDR was new. I remember when the neurofeedback was new, the alpha theta program, I mean, all the kind of neurofeedback stuff. I remember when equine horse assisted stuff seemed kind of out there. But, you know, so some of these things that were kind of trailblazing interventions are kind of now in the mainstream of treatment for the more, you know, inpatient facilities. So yeah, I mean, and I get to learn more about different types of addiction psychiatry that's out there. Once naltrexone came out, Vivitrol came out. Those are kind of nice magic bullets and some of the more interesting psychiatric addiction treatment cocktails that kind of came out to help people through either a detox or to get stabilized, you know, because you need to get stabilized mentally or psychologically in order to really participate from the treatment at a high level. And so if you're still in crisis mode or psychotic or clinically depressed or whatever, you need to be in a zone where you can benefit from the therapy and the counseling and meetings and those things. So
think about how the first conversation must have gone discussing equine therapy. Because now seeing how prevalent it is and how instrumental it is, that's the other thing, is now we see it. I was blown away with how much you can learn about a person from them just being with a horse. That's incredible to me. Imagine how that conversation went. You know, the horse person, the horse guy with an addiction guy, and they just started tossing that around and see what it's turned into. That's wild.
It is. So, and new therapies are coming up. Mm-hmm. Seem like every year there's new therapies that are used in these clinical settings, and so we're always excited to learn about that, because myself as an independent practitioner, I don't really, you know, get out as much as I used to, and therefore I don't really learn as much new stuff as I used to, because I'm kind of busy working and seeing folks and so that's good that we have this kind of consortium between the three of us that we cover a lot of ground. So
yeah, absolutely. Because like you say, the more you know, the more you grow. I mean, it's like knowledge is like confidence building. So you think about, like you say, the families that we serve, if you're not confident and comfortable within the knowledge that you have and you're limited, well, the families can sense that. Mm-hmm. And so now how are they going to feel comfortable with indulging in you and saying, hey, man, I'm going to confide in you with all of my laundry, but you don't seem confident.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, getting out there networking with other people, like while having a discussion with my son, and he said having another set of ears. Yeah. And now you get a different perspective, because we all hear things different. And so it's always a beautiful thing to have that diverse understanding and perspectives from different people, and being able to know the need of a person. You know, like I said, we all three work together, but someone might not need Sherrod, because what Sherrod has to offer is not saying that it's not good enough, but it just may not fit that situation. So Mr. Neil may be the appropriate guy, or Mr. Bruce may be the appropriate person, or maybe neither one of us are. Maybe we need to refer out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to have that kind of knowledge and insight to be able to assess a situation.
Yeah, because everyone's an expert in something. And the three of us do not have the same expertise. We have very similar areas, but the thing I know, especially with Bruce, you're an expert in some things that I honestly don't ever want to be an expert in, because it was too much for me to wrap my head around. It's more than, it's just on another level, and it's right in another area. Yeah. So for me to pretend and play that role would be silly.
Right. So, you know, it is and it is. I mean, some people have in that area you're speaking of, they have substance use issues.
Yeah.
And so, man, that has to be dealt with first. Yeah. First and foremost, hey, even any psychological issue, I would argue that the substance use disorder has to be dealt with first, because nothing else will follow. And like, there's only so much we can do as independent practitioners. We can help, but that's where we need our partners in the facility world to get these clients to the next level. And then, you know what? Sometimes we'll see them on the backside of that for their aftercare. Sometimes they'll move on to other providers. But so it's we're certainly I don't want to say a stepping stone, but we have our place in the environment of recovery.
When Sherrod and I heard someone last night talking about a recent diagnosis, but the individual who was diagnosed hasn't been clean long enough to know anything, you know? So whoever diagnosed, and that was something I said, you really can't tell me. And it happened to me when I was a teenager. I was told I was all these things. Well, for one, I was never sober, so nobody knew what I was, because I was just running amok. And you're absolutely, I'm glad you said that, because I feel like more people need to understand that we can't really get to the bottom of what's going on psychologically or emotionally until you still have substances running through your veins.
Amen. That's exactly right. So, but, and that's where, you know, we have hospitals and other providers to get to the bottom of that issue. And sometimes we need that medical assistance, you know, to help our clients to get to that issue. They're not ready for outpatient services yet. They need a more focused inpatient experience or a medication-assisted treatment. So, and we know that. We're mindful of that. We embrace that. We refer it. So so that's good that we have that network available to us, especially here in a metropolitan area. It's a little bit different if we were in the panhandle of Texas.
Yeah.
Pecos, Texas, or somewhere, you know.
It's a good segue into the next point. Yeah. Was communication skills. How the more we network and the more folks we work with and reach out to and operate on their level, that allows us to, that helps us develop the ability to communicate with different types of people, different kinds of people from different walks of life, and in different, I guess, I don't want to say different fields, but different areas of the field, right? Mm-hmm. You've got treatment that's state-funded treatment, and then you have private pay treatment, and you have sober living, then you have inpatient treatment, you have detox, you have hospital care, you know.
Methadone clinics, yeah.
When you first started, when you first came into the industry, was it a challenge for you learning how to communicate with the different types of people you met?
Absolutely. It's kind of like a foreign language. I mean, hearing all the medical terminology and psychological terminologies, and then, you know, you're kind of navigating from your own life experiences, and it's like, oh, I'm limited. So it's a beautiful thing to learn, like you say, to have the network, the knowledge, and then build the vocabulary, build the knowledge of how do I communicate to this individual. You know, like I say, a big difference. How do I go down to Oak Cliff versus going to Highland Park? You know, you have to know the difference. You have to definitely develop an understanding of some things I say in South Lake or in Highland Park, but I can't say on the south side of Dallas, because they may interpret that the wrong way. They may take that and say, no, man, that's being disrespectful, or you belittling me. So definitely have to learn how to communicate.
And the cultural nuances, right, between north side, south side, east side, west side, whatever side, you know, and that's a beautiful thing, you know, to be able to navigate those, you know, and that's, you know, I mean, both of us have had mental hospital experience and technician experience and taking people down for the booty juice experience and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, we came from mental health tech backgrounds, you know, and worked our way.
I also have a mental health background. I was on the other side of the glass.
You were on the other side of the needle.
Yeah.
But you developed the communication skill.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I found out how to convince them to give me the night-night shot.
There you go, the night-night.
Yeah, I needed it.
So, and that's, you know, that's good that we have that breadth and depth, because then we can interact with more clients, but also different representatives who have come into the industry through either their own recovery, or they were medical marketers, they were medical equipment salespeople. Some people are just straight up business people, putting heads in beds. Some people, you know, are not. So there's in a sense a wide array of people in this industry. Even though it is the addiction treatment industry, it is a wider array of different types of folks, different cultures, subcultures.
Yeah. And you know what I think of immediately, because I'm in recovery, a lot of folks like me and in my network who have that background, we have a morbid sense of humor. And we can say some things to each other that are pretty dark, but we get it and it's funny. However, when I'm around a clinical side or around someone who's experienced trauma, you want to be real careful how you talk to those folks.
Absolutely.
And so the jokes that are okay for me to say with fellows in this field who are in recovery is not always appropriate. And I've got to be real careful, because I don't want to hurt someone like that. Right. I don't want to set somebody off. You know, so being aware with who I'm speaking to and how I am speaking to that individual is real important. I have to be hypersensitive on that fact.
And we're going to be put in to that very thing. Hey, so you guys provide treatment. We provide a sober living environment, coaching and mentoring and consulting. Oh, so you guys do treatment. You know what I mean? So it's really interesting how everything kind of gets drug into the treatment rubric, you know, right. Because if you offer something with therapeutic gains, people assume it's treatment. But when you say the word therapy and treatment, you're on a whole another level of responsibility and certification and licenses and those things. So I think it's kind of interesting for us moving forward. I mean, yes, we have our collective individual businesses, but in that sober living environment space, you know, we're going to have to really learn how to communicate that and not get that necessarily pulled into the treatment. So I'll say this, because there are sober living environments. So the one had 365 treatment afterwards, or case management afterwards. Another place in Florida we were looking at here recently, you know, had the treatment and the sober living. So I can see how people think it's one, but I think so we have a lane and we need to stay in it. We're gonna have to communicate that to folks, and that's gonna be, I find it to be, speaking for myself, you know, whatever, I find that to be a little bit of a challenge, you know.
Even with
investors as well. So just like, this is, you know, this is what we're doing, this is how we're doing it, and stay in that lane.
Because sometimes people want you to be what you're not. Like they really want you to say yes. And like, when you're trying to make me something, you know, it's a square peg in a round hole. Like, no's no.
Right.
You know? And now more and more they have facilities that look like one thing and are actually another. That has been interesting for me to see. You know, the way inpatient treatment used to look, and the way it looks now, very different. It almost looks like what you read about in the big book, in the house, detoxing in the basement, you know, going through DTs with little cups of whiskey, you know, and it's just a house. You know, before, when, you know, when I was going to treatment, it was a hospital. You know, it was a hospital or a big
ward-like environment.
Right. And now it's really anything. It there's all different shapes and sizes, so that presents another challenge, because people, again, well, you look just like this place. It's like, can they do this? Okay, but you're not.
Right.
You know, knowing your place.
Yeah, and that comes with that conditioning. You know, I mean, these people are being conditioned while they're going through treatment, and that's all they hear: treatment, treatment, treatment. So they associate that word treatment with every experience that they have. So like I say, I'm like you, Bruce, it's going to be a challenge, especially coming from the background of being in the hospital, being in those professional environments, and knowing when someone says, hey, you know, they ask a certain type of question, you have to be very careful how you answer that question. Because depending on how you answer that question, the way that you word it, it could come off as treatment versus as a mentor or as a coach. So definitely going to have to be mindful of that, dealing with these individuals that we're going to be serving.
Yeah, it is kind of a form of aftercare. Aftercare is an interesting word, too, in itself, right? Oh, that's aftercare treatment. Well, does it have to be treatment? It doesn't have to be treatment. Aftercare could be sober living, you know, and that's where people usually transition from their core treatment to a sober living house or sober living environment of some sort for 90 days. And so that, just like you said, Neil, that takes many forms in itself, from an Oxford house to what we're trying to do.
IOP to PHP.
You know, I mean, so, you know, step down, step down, step down. So yeah, this is going to be an interesting, an interesting challenge. Because I guess it's really interesting because if you see our experience and our background, it is easy to drag us into the treatment zone. But we're going to be just a little bit south of that in the sober living environment zone. And so being able to communicate that to the reps and other people in our community here and in the United States that would be interested in referring to us, we'd have to, you know, articulate what our lane is and what our
limitations are. I like to look at it as support, man. We're just supporting the support.
Yeah, exactly. 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 So I also like the idea of being an allied partner with the treatment facility. I think some of the treatment facilities, you know, we want to be a partner. The client doesn't start all over again. So if they had a treatment plan or a discharge plan, we can take that discharge plan and then act on it, you know, and follow through with some of those things, if not all of them. You know, we can be a partner. Some of the treatment centers will have research that they conduct that first year post-release to look at their own success rate of abstinence or whatever. And make no mistake about it, being in a sober living environment post-treatment will help that treatment center's statistics and research show that treatment center was effective. So
it will also help them with discharge plan, you know, whether this works or not.
Right.
Is this a good route?
Right. I get calls all the time from rehabs and jails and prosecutors. Anyway, they won't let this person go until they have that next step in place. They will not let you go. You're like, hey, they will, but, you know, hey, are you going to be the person doing the aftercare or the follow-up on this person? Yes. Okay. Then we'll set up a discharge date.
Right. Because wouldn't it be negligence on their side if it didn't?
For
if
sure.
Something were to happen?
I mean, absolutely. But it just shows... It just shows,
Hours. 72 hours, yeah. You're still liable up to 72 hours. You know, when I worked at Mesa Springs Hospital, those psychiatrists was strict on, hey, make sure that this person has an aftercare plan and you need to follow up and you need to make connections. You need to talk to someone. You don't just discharge based on their word. You have to actually talk to the facility where they're going being discharged to.
And I like what you said about working together with the other places, that credibility and kind of working together, because if you know how this works, there's places that say things about this place and it goes back and forth when really we all have the same goal. We're supposed to have the same goal, is to help people and find the most effective way to fight the battle with addiction and alcoholism, and really just support the recovery community in whatever way you can. So finding ways to work with other people and find out how we can play our role and help the right way is important. And working with other people is a big part of that.
I think the interesting challenge aspect that we have is we have the sober living side of us, but we also have our private practice, you know, our own private work that we conduct. So I think it's kind of a 2-for-1 effect, or 3-for-1, or whatever. How many people you see on the screen? No, but so I think that's kind of cool. It's even better, honestly, because I think, you know, let's picture Rod out of a hat. Like, hey, okay, so you see people, you know, privately as well. Yes. Oh, well, if I needed to see you I need to see you and Neil for something to do with my family. Yeah, you can always, you know, you can always get that. You can always get that in addition to the sober living environment. So I love the fact that, you know, I have some specific training and research and other mental health stuff too, that if there's an issue there, that we can always go that plane if we have to, for an appropriate referral. But so I do like, you know, like the fact that
personal.
Yeah. And rather than having to wait for someone to connect you to a resource, you are the resource.
Right.
So you've got it right there. That is pretty unique.
Right. Each one of us makes our own referrals, but then collectively in the sober living, it'll make its referrals.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, man, that's some synergism right there now. You know, that's a good bit of action. So that's a lot of people coming through, going somewhere,
right?
And not, we're just here to receive, or we're just here to take your client. That's it, man. I think we're going to be, in the next year or two, we're going to be sending as many, if not more, than we receive.
Right.
Mark my words.
Yeah.
Mark my words,
yeah,
man. So, you know. And that underscores being a member of the community and knowing folks and being a part and you know, just looking forward to that. I almost kind of envy, you know, I have social media and the Facebook, and all the different Facebook groups and recovery. I love it, man. And, man, of course, you know, folks in the marketing sphere for their facility make the time to do it because that's kind of their job description. I'm like, oh, man, I missed that meeting. Oh, man, I missed that lunch, you know. And so one of the things I look forward to, maybe between the three of us, one of us can go, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know you talked about a breakfast coming up recently. Like, oh, man, you know, like, I don't know, but at least you're going, you know what I mean?
Make it. That's the thing. I have to force myself to come out of work and do that work too, stay connected. It's hard because we like what we do.
But,
well, I love what I do, you know, so I just get in.
Oh, and look, I don't know if you remember me back in the day, but I was that's all – I was a marketing machine when I was back in the earlier 2000s, man. I was out there laying bricks, man. Hitting bricks. That was
hard for me to meet someone in DFW that doesn't know you.
I'm being
very honest.
Mm-hmm.
So
I remember those days, man. Just fill in.
Right. I got a dinner to go to. Old Sherrod, I leave Sherrod in charge of a group, you know, and man, you know, some fun times. But that's good though, because that's just what's the cord of three strands is cannot be broken very easily, for sure. So I think that you know, we have that to offer. So,
and the good thing too, we keep in mind about, you know, we're talking about the professional networking. Also keep in mind that we're teaching the people that we serve how to get back into the arena of networking appropriately. Because that's going to be a new thing for them as well, you know. Because again, Mr. Neil, you in recovery, you can answer this better than I can. The sense of fear that you may have of what it's going to look like, what it's going to sound like outside of the people that I know and the people that I'm comfortable with.
Yeah, there's a whole transition, especially with the younger guys and gals, meeting new people. You know, meeting new people. How am I going to find new friends? I don't want new friends. And then it goes from your friends to your network. And then how am I going to network? How am I going to meet people, find a good job? How am I going to build a career? Yeah, it's for most people who use and who are deep in their substance abuse, you don't necessarily become more social. You do while you're under the influence, but it's not like you're building relationships. You know, you're just a social butterfly while you're under the influence. But what happens typically is we seclude. And, you know, we pull away from, and so you're doing the opposite now in sobriety. And so we're trying to teach these folks how to connect, because that's what you have to do. You have to get plugged in. You have to get plugged in, meet new people, and learn how to live differently. So you're absolutely right. But it's a challenge. But I am living proof that if you really get out there and do it, the benefits are huge. I mean, huge.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, Yeah, and you talk about credibility. I don't even have that thing, But, you know, having that credibility, not only because of our own experiences or experience, strength, and hope that we can give to other people, but also we know we have that knowledge base of not only material, but of people in the network that we can refer to. And so, gosh, I can't tell you how many messages I get a week. Hey, I'm asking for a friend, this. Do you know anybody who can do this? I'm like, okay, I know this person over here. I know this person. And so it's kind of like you were saying, it's because I've been around a long time, because I don't want to say a false sense of credibility, but certainly just being in the industry for a while just kind of built up that acumen. Built that up. And so that's good. So it's it's amazing. Yeah, I see people come in the field and they start, and they use their recovery. You know, that's a big thing. And then they're in practice for 20, 30 years, like, oh yeah, I'm in recovery. So they see you as, you know, that credibility. They see you as this kind of professional in the industry, and they forget, like, oh, you're in recovery too. And they, so it's kind of interesting. Like, nobody's ever asked me, hey, did you go to University of North Carolina School of Medicine, Chapel? Nobody's ever asked me about, hey, man, University of Wyoming, isn't that kind of chilly out there? Like, nobody's ever asked me that, right? I mean, I wish they would almost, you know, be like, yeah, let me tell you. But they don't seem, you know, there's no, you know, they don't even think that. They don't even think to ask that. And that's amazing, you know, about what people's perceptions are and what they are. So it's kind of fun. Like, you know, I was like, man, don't you want to know more about me? No.
Really.
Just fix me. Fix my kid.
Yeah.
You got a license, don't you have all? Yes. Yeah. Okay. That's you, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, then do it. Okay. You know, so it's funny. Mm-hmm. And this with time, you know, it's funny with time. I was like, oh, okay. I guess, you know, it's anyway, just a funny observation, but nonetheless, everybody has their place and everybody has their role. So
yeah, absolutely. That's probably the coolest thing about it is this industry is it's just from everybody team together and everybody serves a purpose.
It is fun.
It's cool.
It is fun. It is fun. Just to keep that balance. It really is about the other people. You know, it's not about us.
Yeah. Good point.
It's about who we serve. And, you know, hey, we're professionals. We get a wage for what we do. But at the end of the day, we're here to serve serve the people and serve our clients. And so that's a balance I think a lot of people have to keep as well. So not so much us, but things can get out of balance with some folks. So, all right. Well, any other closing thoughts? Or
no, a great show, great topic, great information.
Good to see you. Good to see you. Represent. Next Level Focus Mentoring.
Yeah.
So how can folks reach you, Sherrod? Go ahead. Break it down.
Reach me at www.nlfmtexas.org. Just get on that website and check me out.
Okay. Neil?
And you can find me at ElevatedLifestyleAcademy.com or Elevated Lifestyle Academy on all the Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, on all of them under the same name, Elevated Lifestyle Academy.
I'm at ConciergeCoach.net. So, folks, thanks for listening and watching the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. We'll see you next time. Give you another great and exciting show. So until then, take care and stay safe, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.